Good afternoon. We'll call this meeting to the Job Growth, Energy Affordability, Policy and Finance Committee to order. Today is Tuesday, January 10th. The first order of business is we're going to do the introduction of staff pages as well as of individual members. So if we could start off with the committee page, maybe have him come up. Please tell us who you are, where you're from, and what animal you're more scared of and why.
And the committee chair doesn't count.
Good afternoon, Chairman Garofalo, members of the committee. My name is Samuel Quist. I'm the committee page. And first of all, I'm not related to Representative Alan Quist. I've been asked that many times this week. let's see. An animal that I am most afraid of? Probably, I would say,
well, your introductions are going to take a really long time.
I'm
going
to be truthful, this is politics. Lying is in the season.
I would say probably black bears, because I grew up in River Falls, Wisconsin, and they've actually been known to, in small towns like that, they've actually been known to come out of the hills and into town. So
we have a very positive and optimistic kickoff to the Job Growth Committee's agenda. So Samuel, thanks for being here. I look forward to working with you this session, and thanks a lot. Representative Monia.
Are you a Packer fan then?
I am a Vikings fan, actually.
You get to stay. Congratulations. So we'll start on the inside of the table, and I guess Representative Mahoney, we'll start with you. We'll work our way around the inside, and then we'll go around the outside. So Representative Mahoney.
I represent Tim Mahoney. I represent District 67A. No fear of animals, and I just want everybody to know I'm going to continue to be the congenial, kind, gentle person I've always been in this committee.
Expect nothing else.
Cal Barr, 31B. As far as animals, I don't, do you count a snake as an animal, or is it just a...
I thought it was cows this morning.
Yeah, I would say...
I like cows. I'm not scared of cows.
I think that'd be good. Yeah? Yeah, staff too, please.
David Sullivan with House CFL Research. I was born and raised in the Coombe area of St. Paul's, somewhat like the chair.
Oh.
Bob Eliff, House Research. Grizzly bears.
Yeah. Grizzly bears. All right. We'll move over to this side now.
Anna Shaleen, House Research. I don't like butterflies, and I'm from Pine City, Minnesota.
Chris Emple, House Whistle. I too have an insect dislike, bees.
Hi, I'm Ben Weeks from House Research, and bats, because they combine all the scary aspects of mice with the scary aspects of birds.
Sandy Lehman, representative for District 5B, and I think the snakes have it.
Paul Thiessen from Minneapolis.
Representative O'Neill, I have 29B, Buffalo, Monticello, Maple Lake, where we have the great nuclear power plants, and just outside Sherco, and Representative Newberger's district, and I'm not afraid of anything.
Oh, you will be. You will be. Jeff Howe, I represent the Cold Spring area, wraparound St. Cloud, and I dislike, it's not an animal, but I dislike camel spiders for various reasons.
Jean Wiginius, I represent very far south central Minneapolis and part of Richfield.
Dan Fabian, District 1A, the furthest northwest corner of the state, Roseville, Kitson, Marshall, part of Pennington, a little sliver of southern Manitoba and eastern North Dakota. mosquitoes, they don't like them. But I'm also glad to hear Representative Mahoney has a little bit of northern lingo in him when he was talking to the page. He said, ended his sentence with then, and that's what we do up there, so that's good.
Hi, Paul Anderson, the representative 12B, which is kind of between St. Cloud and Alexandria, good agricultural district. I'm on a farm. We have an old farmhouse and have an occasional bat in the house in the summertime. My wife is deathly afraid of bats, and I've learned to put the baseball cap on and get the tennis racket and take care of them. So anyway.
Hello, Mr. Chairman. My name is Mike Sundin. I'm from District 11A, Carlton County. It encompasses Cloquet, Moose Lake area. As far as fear of vicious animals, I guess I would have to say it would be my ex-wife.
Mike's hot, Mr. Chair.
She's not here.
Nolan West, District 37B, which is most of Blaine, and it would definitely be any ant with carnivorous tendencies.
Hello, everyone. Happy New Year's. Welcome back. My name is Tarina Noreen. I represent District 65A, St. Paul. So it's right outside this building, west on the avenue, and I don't look at myself free enough an animal, you know, so, but I just like bats.
Bill Glon, House Caucus Research.
Where are you from, Mr. Glon?
Adam Seidel, Committee Administrator from Eden Prairie, and as a homeowner, I dislike termites.
Megan Rice, I'm your Committee Legislative Assistant. I'm from Champlin, Minnesota, and I'm scared of sharks because they kind of sneak up on you underwater. So.
Jim Neuberger, I'm from House District 15B, Central Minnesota. I have lots of firearms, so I fear nothing.
Dave Baker, Wilmer, Candiwai County. I am on the snake train. I do not like snakes.
Representative Peggy Scott from Andover, represent Andover, Northern Coon Rapids, and one precinct in Ramsey. And I absolutely cannot stand cockroaches. No cockroaches in my life. Yuck. I won't even hit them with a shoe because I can't stand it. Disgusting.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Erin May Quaid. I represent 57A, which is Apple Valley in a little part of Lakeville. And I'm not afraid of anything like Representative O'Neill, but I have an intense dislike of raccoons. They have fur hands and they wash trash, which is ridiculous.
Bob Vogel from 20A, which is Southern Scott and Western Lee Sur County. Red squirrels. We have a cabin and I don't like them in the attic.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Jason Metz. I represent the east and nicest half of the Iron Range. I don't think there's anyone here to challenge that from my region. And I've got this animal. It seems to follow me only certain times a day. I see it in the morning, usually after a shower, and just can't quite place it. But it often resembles myself. So fear of self is healthy. Healthy, Mr. Chair.
Jason Rarick, I represent the Pine and Kennebec counties, and when I have to crawl in attics or crawl spaces at work, I really do not like spiders.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. Jim Dabney from District 63A, which is part of South Minneapolis. The day after Thanksgiving, as part of the opt-out side events, my family and I went down to the Minnesota River bottoms in, I think it was the Bloomington area, and went for a hike, and right there was a big sign warning that there was a boa constrictor loose in the area. So that was enough to get my attention.
Very good. I'm Pat Rofflo. I'm from Farmington, and for various reasons, I'm very fearful of cougars. Very scared of cougars. So, first thing regarding committee rules of an email to members. Oh, Representative Clark, you're here. We just went around and say your name, where you're from, and what animal you're most afraid of.
My brother said I could not say his name. Karen Clark, I represent four city neighborhoods in South Minneapolis. The animal I'm most afraid of?
You can.
A tick.
Wood tick. Okay. All right, so committee rules were emailed to everyone. If you have any questions about it, just follow up with me afterwards and let me know. Those who were on this committee last session know that this committee will start on time. It always starts on time. There is if you're not going to be here, there's no need to call the committee legislative assistant and let them know. There's two statuses of attendance here, present and excused. There's no unexcused. If you're not here, it's presumed that you have something else going on, so there's no reason to let us know if you can't be here. Again, for committee hearing requests, please email the committee administrator. And finally, for first-term lawmakers, the unofficial rule that members, whether the first-term members of this committee or first-term members from other committees, if you're presenting a bill to this committee, it is expected that you bring treats, preferably Hostess products and Twinkies, cupcakes, but especially Suzy Q's, the chair's favorite. And if you find, if you're saying that that's wrong and it's unethical and we shouldn't do that, you're right, we shouldn't, but we will anyways. So just bring your treats as a first-term member if you're going to hearing. And I know I have Representative Mahoney's complete backing on that issue. So Representative Mahoney.
I'm a much nicer person if I have nothing
to do with the important thing is, absolutely, good to know. So, so that's that. In terms of the committee this year, just kind of a brief statement before we get testimony from the commissioner and others. I think if there's anything that we can take from this year's election results in November, it's that Minnesotans are not interested in government as usual. Minnesotans are more interested in results than they are intentions, and they're more interested in outputs rather than inputs. We're going to hear from a number of state agencies over the next couple of months, and we're also going to hear from the executive branch about some ideas for new programs. And as part of that conversation, it's my hope that we will have a focus also on discontinuing old programs that are not producing the results that taxpayers in Minnesota, nor those who are willing, were hoping to serve under those programs, are not getting the best results from. If those people are seeking to include new spending initiatives, we need to make sure that we have efficiencies being achieved in existing programs that will boost the return on investment for all taxpayers. And finally, what I'm hoping we'll hear, maybe it's not as much today, but in later testimony, is we're going to hear from each agency how they track any results, and that who in the organization is responsible for producing these outcomes and measuring these outcomes. It's my focus this session, and I hope members of the committee as well, that it's time to require productivity and results over wishes and talk, and I just look forward to working with everyone here the next 2 years. So with that, we'll start with you. Commissioner, we got our technology issues resolved?
Yes, just in the nick of time.
All right. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed for your testimony. And members, if in the event that you have questions, depending upon how long the commissioner's testimony goes, my thought is to try to hold questions until the end. But if I sense that the testifier needs a little break or there's kind of a, an opportunity for some input, then we'll jump in and get member questions. But just flag down the committee administrator if you have any questions or comments. So, Commissioner, you're up first, and welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the invitation to speak today. For the record, my name is Shantara Hardy. I'm the commissioner of the Department of Employment and Economic Development, also known as DEED, which I will refer to in the presentation. Mr. Chair, I appreciate the meeting this last week to get an understanding of your expectations for the committee today, and I look forward to meeting with all members of the committee to be able to brief you in detail on the agency and also just get an idea of your interest in the agency. And so the committee asked me today to talk about a couple specific topics. Mr. Chair, if it's okay, before I dive in, I just want to take a brief moment just to give a little bit of information about the agency, just to be able to orient the members and the staff, and to be able to just to provide you with some context for the items that you asked for us to discuss. And so, and this is funky because it's mirrored here. With respect to the items we want to discuss today, as I stated, provide an agency overview, be able to talk a little bit about two of our specific economic development programs and a couple of our workforce development programs. And as the chair stated, I'm open to questions, but if we want to wait until after the presentation, I'm happy to answer questions at that time. So, as you know, DEED is the state's principal economic development agency. We have about 1,500 dedicated staff members statewide working toward one goal, which is to enhance the economic success of individuals, businesses, and communities, really working to improve opportunities for prosperity and independence. Our programs promote business retention, recruitment, and expansion, international trade, workforce readiness, and community stability. As you will see, our agency falls within four divisions, and I think you guys have a slide in front of you, and so you'll be able to pull out your cheaters to see, and I think that's the unique nature of our organization, that we have a number of different distinct areas that we work on within the department. And so the first area that we have is operations, and that's kind of our back office, really our focusing on our human resources, our technical planning, our communications, our labor market information. To the chair's point, that is our area that's looking at forecasting what's happening in the market, what's happening with our workforce, our new our Office of Policy, which encompasses our government relations team and our economic analysis unit, and our diversity and economic and equal opportunity office, that's really focused on complaint-driven parts of the agency, and then information technology. The other division is our economic development division, and within that division is our Office of Broadband, really focused on how do we make sure that our businesses and our communities are connected. And the next area in that division is our business development area, and that's the division that's really focused on how are we helping our businesses go to the next level with investment funds. And so there's our business finance funds. And then the other part of the business development agency is, excuse me, division is our community development. And that's really focused on how are we investing in communities. And so our redevelopment funds, most of the larger cities have a direct appropriation from the federal government for the community block grant, but we also administer it for our greater Minnesota cities. And so really focused on community investment. And then our Minnesota Trade Office is within that division. The next division, which is our largest division, is our workforce division. Under DEED, we have a unique positioning. We have a federal agency within DEED with our Disability Determination Unit, which is Social Security. And so within that part of our agency, we're helping Minnesotans to get access to those services. In addition to that, we are staffed to the Governor's Workforce Development Council, State Services for the Blind, our workforce system coordination, so that how are we working to make sure that our systems for workforce programs are running smoothly. We also have the state's unemployment insurance, vocational rehab, which is services for individuals with living with disabilities, and then our adult and youth employment and training programs. And the last office that you'll see over there is the newly created Office of Economic Equity and Opportunity, really focused on how are we making sure from a geographic standpoint, from a racial standpoint, and from a gender standpoint, that we are really helping Minnesotans get access to jobs, that and making sure that the training, and also from an internal standpoint, that our agency is running efficient enough to be able to provide services to those cohorts of people. And so that office is new as of last year. And I will say that's not on this chart. One of the dotted line is the Film and TV Board, and then up next to my name, I also work with two independent agencies, which is the Public Facilities Authority, and they're responsible for our sewer and water and bonding for the state, and then Explore Minnesota Tourism. So I try to say that in 2 minutes, and hopefully I master that. We have a lot going on within the agency. So it's my understanding that in your documents and your budget documents to come, that you have a slide that speaks to kind of our fiscal year budgeting. And this one goes out to 12 and 13, but I just wanted to let you know that our total base budget, both federal and state, is about $887 million. So that's about $440 a year. You'll notice right in the middle is the federal funds. The majority of the funding for our agency comes from the federal government. When you think about our operating dollars, our operating budget is approximately $3.2 million a year, and that takes care of our back office and so everything. And so we're operating a very lean agency that's really focused on delivering our programs and services. This is another look at kind of the spending with programs, and you'll see the purple area is our workforce development division. A lot of our spending within the agency is within that division. And after that is our vocational rehabilitation services for people with disabilities. And then following after that is our business development area and then unemployment insurance. And so, as I stated, a lot of our services and a lot of our staff is concentrated in our workforce development area.
Commissioner, what's GSS?
That's general services, so that is kind of our operating, so that's why that the 5%. And then the MTO is the Minnesota Trade Office. All right. As stated, DEED has 1,500 dedicated public servants working to fulfill our mission. And I once again apologize for the small print here. But just to highlight a couple things on this slide, as you will see within each of the divisions, over the last couple fiscal years, our number of members of Team DEED have fluctuated. A lot of, as I stated, our program funding and a lot of what we do as an agency is connected to the program and services that we deliver. And so when you think about our unemployment insurance team, you'll see a big hike, which was after the recession, during the recession, of needing staffers to help people that were unemployed. And so people getting access to unemployment benefits. And so you'll see we were, you know, all the way up to about 547 in unemployment insurance, and we are currently down to about 368. And so it really fluctuates with the economic cycles and also fluctuates with programs that you all send to our agency to be able to staff those programs, and as well as from a federal government perspective. And early on, you'll see a lot of hike. I just want to point out from the 2008 and 2009, and that was that federal stimulus funded a lot of workforce development programs for temporary increases to help individuals get back to work. And so you'll see those increases there. So shifting gears, I want to go into the specific economic development programs that the chair wanted us to talk about. But just for context, again, wanting you to just see the programs that we're working on within the economic development area, which every day are looking to figure out strategies to help businesses thrive and grow. And so our business assistant areas are providing tools to businesses as they look to expand locally, as they look to expand globally. A lot of our businesses in Minnesota have global reach, and so our trade office is working to help them be able to access those opportunities, as well as our community assistance program, as I mentioned, you know, really being able to help get community spaces shovel-ready. And so we know that most of our work is in partnership with our local communities, and we could not do it without them, as well as delivering on our business development programs. A lot of that is in partnership with other nonprofit agencies, other economic development arms, and so we are working in concert to make sure that businesses are able to get access to the resources that they need. So the area that we want to focus on today is our economic development incentives. And as you guys know, that as we start to think about our economy, as we become more automated, as we become more globalized, that the competition for attracting new business and keeping business is fierce. And so being able to have access to stable economic investments plays a key role in partnering with a business and a community to be able to make sure a business is able to access those resources, either to expand or to stay. And it's my belief that our economic development resources play a critical role in our ability to compete. You know, as we think about our surrounding states with respect to, we spent a little under, $60 million total in our business development programs. Other states are double and three times that with respect to their incentives. And so we are surrounded by, similar communities in terms of attributes and quality of life, which are the things that you're selling as well to businesses. And so being able to have stable resources to be able to work with businesses and communities is very important. So what's our approach? As I stated, our incentives are modest. You know, we think about, you know, the investments that we're trying to make. We're making sure that we're making strategic investments. One of the major pieces of criteria for our investments is that private investments, and that the business is willing and ready to create new jobs, increase wages. Those are requirements under our incentive programs, and that the time that the loan or the grant is capped, and so they're not forever. You have a certain time period to be able to make sure that you're creating those jobs, or we're accelerating the payments to be able to get that funding back. And so a lot of, you know, accountability and transparency is in the process. So a number of our funds, when businesses access those funds, they go through public hearings in that local community. And so we're working in partnership with local government to make sure that when we are making those investments, that the agreements are public once they're signed. All the stipulations of the grant agreements are there for individuals and communities and policy leaders to be able to see. So the fund that I want to focus on now is our job creation fund, which is one of our effective tools that we use to really create an incentive for businesses to stay, expand, and prevent them from relocating. So the Minnesota Job Creation Fund, which is a statewide pay performance program, was created in 2014. This program allows companies who are considering Minnesota to receive financial incentive if and only if they create at least 10 full-time positions at certain compensation levels and have invested at least $500,000 in real property improvements. And so as you think about the job creation fund and how we go about working with business, it's either through a job creation award, and that's providing a grant to the business to actually create jobs. And so that's working in partnership with the business to make sure we understand what the type of position is and what and how long it will take for them to create that position. The other area is capital investment and rebates. And so we are working to award based on total capital investment in land and buildings. And so companies can receive up to 5% in rebates for real property improvements in the Twin Cities and up to 7.5% in greater Minnesota with a maximal capital investment of $500,000. Just one thing to note, businesses in greater Minnesota also benefit from a lower job retention requirement than the Twin Cities, 75 jobs instead of 200. And this is in thinking about the job availability, the talent that's there, and being realistic about the skills that are needed in order to fulfill the types of positions that we are looking to invest in. So eligibility requirements. You have to be in an eligible industry. Making sure that when we're having the conversation, when we're awarding the job creation fund, that you have other options on the table, that it's not a threat, that it's very clear that you are going to leave the state. And we are looking to make sure that, you know, projects that clear that threshold, we're doing analysis of, you know, the industry from, you know, is it going to impact other businesses? What's the business's performance? What are the sales outside of Minnesota? And so really trying to paint a picture from an economic and business standpoint as to where that company is, the viability of keeping them in the state, and the viability of them actually creating jobs. And so we are working to do that and making sure that we are able to get that return on investment from the community, from the business, excuse me. So when we think about the total performance to date for the Job Creation Fund, we are projecting that we will have created or retained about 4,682 jobs. When you break that down, that's about 1,672 in greater Minnesota and about 3,000 in the metro area. We have projected about an average $24 in hourly pay, about $18 in greater Minnesota and about $28 in the metro area. And thinking about the leveraging, and I think this is one of the most important parts of this, that makes the incentive programs very, very valuable is that we're making these investments in the companies to be able to leverage larger private investment. And so when we think about the expected investment, about $33.4 million in program awards is expected to leverage about $1 billion in private investment. And so that's about $11.9 million leveraging $374 million in Greater Minnesota, and about $21.5 million leveraging about $669 million in the metro area. And so it's a really good payoff, you know, if we're, number one, able to create those jobs, number two, be able to have a company that is going to be successful, and I think the third piece is getting the money back to be able to reinvest it in other companies and throughout the state.
And, Commissioner, at this point, I think we have a question from Representative Mahoney. So mm-hmm. before you go into the Minnesota Investment Fund, might be a good time to... Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was trying to listen, and I probably missed it, but you spoke to how it breaks down 75%. How do you break that? What are the advantages for Greater Minnesota versus Urban Minnesota that you just spoke to? I didn't catch enough of it. It was in my happy place.
Commissioner.
I think it was 75-25 or something like that.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, with respect to the breakdown of jobs created, are you specifically asking about...
No, Mr. Chair, I'll just pass and I'll catch up with her later and get it.
Okay.
Anything else on the Job Creation Fund?
Just want to highlight just these when we look at the map of the projects approved, and I want to note that the dots are cities, but they are multiple projects within each city. Okay. So we'll move on to the Minnesota Investment Fund.
Before we go on the Minnesota Investment Fund, questions from members of the committee, Representative Howell?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the question I got is, can you give us an example of the types of industries? I see they're eligible industries mm-hmm. that you discussed, but could you just give us a couple of examples of what types of industries we're looking at? What would be eligible?
We're looking at manufacturing, being able to invest in high-tech companies, healthcare. Am I missing healthcare? A little bit of healthcare and information technology.
So, Commissioner, what would be an example of an ineligible business?
Retail. I have my experts back here as I'm learning lots.
Hoping for a more interesting answer besides
retail.
Retail, like sorcery or alchemy or something like that. So,
yeah.
Any other questions for Representative Anderson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, talking about your grant program, your competitive grant program, hearing a lot of times in education, for example, that a smaller school or town is at a disadvantage because they don't have the staff to apply for grants. In your situation, working with businesses, is it more difficult for a smaller business to go through the process to apply for some of your programs?
Mr.
Chair, Representative, it really just depends at the level of funding that they're looking for. But our staff works directly with the business to take them through the process. And so we're making sure that, you know, with respect to paperwork, that we're working directly with them. And depending on if they're going to the Job Creation or the Minnesota Investment Fund, a local community also could apply for the fund on behalf of the business. And so our team is work directly with the business to be able to help them get through the process.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In last year's budget, there was a significant reduction in the Job Creation Fund. Have you been able to take any new applications in the ensuing time? When did you stop taking applications, and when did you run out of money? I probably have the date somewhere in my notes, but...
Commissioner.
Is that when the chair took all your money?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney,
this is a softball.
We are for the job creation fund, when we think about the funds that we had prior to the cut, we had a number of projects that encumbered the funds. And when you do the math now with respect to the funds that were about to be rewarded, and then you look at the funds that we actually just made our last funds with from the encumbered, we have about less than $1 million left in the job creation fund to last us through the fiscal year. And we, just to note that, you know, that those funds are in there because we had a couple projects that came in the last minute that didn't meet the requirements, and so we pulled back the funding. So we would be at zero.
Is there more?
No, I'm good.
What do you want?
I can go on, but I'll leave it alone.
I suspect you will at some point, Representative Mahoney. All right, so, Commissioner, please continue with your testimony.
All right. So just to move to our other investment program, and this is the Minnesota Investment Fund, and this is a loan program, and it was launched in 1985, and it provides financing to help and attract high-quality jobs and really work to improve the economic vitality of communities. And just a note of difference, as I stated, that MIF dollars are dispersed to local governments, which in turn provide loans to businesses, as opposed to the job creation fund, directly to businesses. The loans are attractive because they are upfront and can be used to offset capital expenses such as equipment purchase. And just by the numbers, just so you know, we had about nearly $150 million loaned to about 500 projects since its inception, and about 69% of those funds awarded to Greater Minnesota. And a lot of those funds have started to be repaid back. And so we're able to seed our revolving loan fund and to be able to invest in more than 100 local communities throughout the state.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Mahoney.
I'm trying to think, is that the program that the locals get to keep part of the loan once it's paid back? Or?
Yes.
So 69, Mr. Chair, thank you. So the 69% of those funds are going out to Greater Minnesota. What's the percentage of that 69% that's kept in the local community? Is it 50% they get to keep, or is it 20%?
I'm going to call Kevin McKinnon, who is our deputy that's over business development, so that I don't give you the wrong percentage, if that's okay, Mr. Chair.
Absolutely.
All right.
Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record.
Kevin McKinnon, Deputy Commissioner of Economic Development at TEED. In answer to your question, local communities can keep 40% of a loan up to $100,000. And so as the commissioner said, we've got about 100 local communities with revolving loan funds as a result of this program over the years that has seeded those funds. And then they can use it for similar loans to the Minnesota Investment Fund, and we sort of monitor all those transactions as well.
Representative Mahoney.
So when we cut that fund, we cut local funding for Greater Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I don't think that's what he said. I get your point.
Start to speak about good.
Yeah, it's January, Representative Mahoney. <It's January. laughs> Any other questions for the testifier while he's up here? You might want to stick around just in case.
Yeah.
So, Commissioner, please continue with your testimony.
Thank you. So just briefly going into, some of the specific investment criteria for the Minnesota Investment Fund. You know, companies are eligible up to $1 million in funding. Our team really tries to be thoughtful and conservative about our awards. So we look at, as I said, around $500,000. And when you think about historically, many of our projects have been less than that. So, like, the average MIF grant is about $450,000. Company is creating about 50 jobs, and, you know, the leverage is about $5.5 million from that investment of about $450,000. And a couple things that we look at when we evaluate projects from the investment fund is, you know, is it increasing the tax base? Are wages being increased? You know, are we really going to see that job creation and retention? Are they quality jobs? Are we moving people up into better skilled positions? and doing all this within 2 years, and is the company able to meet kind of the loan payment requirements? And really, the thing that I think is also important is that, you know, public-private investment and making sure that about at least 50% of the total project is private financed. And so being able to use our public dollars to leverage the investment, you know, again, for an average project, you know, about $5.5 million is something that we, you know, really look to making sure that we're getting quality projects, but being able to get that return on investment is a good thing. So again, and I just want to also make sure I note that we do have a copy of an interactive map, and so it looks a little funky, but if you go on our website, you can actually hover over the dots in your district, and you can see the name of the project, the actual award amount, the jobs that's created, and the amount that was leveraged. And so you can go to our website and be able to pull up all of the job creation fund investments and also the Minnesota investment within your district. So when we think about just the total performance, and I also just want to, you know, highlight a couple, just to the questions earlier, a couple projects that we have done that have qualified for MIF funds. In St. Cloud, we invested in Gehringhoff, which is a German farm manufacturer. They invested over $20 million in a new facility in St. Cloud, created over 100 jobs. In Brooklyn Park, we invested in Olympus, which is a leading designer of innovative solutions for medical and surgical projects, and that was about $1 million loan, which leveraged about $37 million in investment for a 180,000 square feet facility, creating about 100 jobs, but also retaining about 265 jobs. The poster child that many talk about in the last year is Shutterfly in Shakopee. They took advantage of the Minnesota Investment Fund, and we provided $1 million loan to create up to 1,000 jobs, and they created about a 217,000 square foot facility in Shakopee. And so making that investment, and as you think about the jobs that are created and retained, again, that return on investment is important. And so just a couple things, again, just want to highlight just a question that we did get with respect to the job creation fund. When you look at the account, I think from the numbers, it'll show that we have about $10 million. We currently have 12 projects requesting about $5.5 million. And so if funded, we'll have about $4.5 million in the pipeline. We potentially have 56 projects. Excuse me?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Mahoney.
It depends. Many of the projects is non-public information, but it really just depends on the type of industry and things like that. So we have 56 projects. We haven't signed anything, so we don't know if they'll specifically go for a full loan in MIF, or they eventually go to job creation. That's what usually happens. But right now, 56 organizations are asking for MIF dollars.
Representative Mahoney.
So you have no aggregate number that says you have 56 projects that have a request in for $100 million or $10 million?
Mr. Chair. Sure. I'll have Kevin answer.
Mr. Chair, members, the projects that the commissioner is referring to, essentially what they take time, and a lot of these have been in our pipeline for several months. And so we continue to work with them to make sure that not only all the pieces are ready, whether it be private financing, local financing, or whatever we can throw in together, work and work for the company, and ultimately allow the company to proceed. And so a lot of these companies were in timelines such that they either have not said that they're going to go ahead and do it, or they're still contemplating other options. There's a variety of reasons and how we work with them. And not that they're all requesting that amount of money, because simply we can't fulfill all those requests. But the answer is, how do we make sure the ones that are going to happen as quickly as we can, how do we get those to happen and people hiring and investments being made immediately?
Mr. McKinnon, what is the scheduled appropriation or forecast appropriation for fiscal years 18 and 19 for the Job Creation Fund and the Minnesota Investment Fund?
Mr. Chair, the Job Creation Fund is scheduled at $6.5 million per year, and the Minnesota Investment Fund is $11 million.
See no questions. Commissioner, please continue with your testimony.
So just to end on just with the performance overall with MIF, we are expected to create nearly 5,000 new jobs and retain more than 500. When you look at that breakdown, that's about 3,000 for the metro and about 1,799 for Greater Minnesota. Projects projected to average about $24 an hour, and when we look at the breakdown in the metro, that's about $27 an hour. In Greater Minnesota, about $18 an hour. And then when we think about kind of the leverage funds, $39.8 million in program awards expected to leverage more than $960 million in investment. And so,
Commissioner, one quick question. Previously, the legislature has set aside or specified specific projects from the MIF fund. So what comes to mind is there's a large aircraft manufacturer in Duluth. I don't know if I should say their name or not, but there's been a couple of those. When it comes to the performance metrics and the accountability metrics, are you still involved, or is it because we kind of specified that they're on their own that you guys are less involved in that?
Mr. Chair, we are involved. However, in some cases, if you specify, it does not meet the requirements that we normally would have within our program. And so in those cases, such as the one that you referenced up in Duluth, we obviously are part of the program, ensure that the money is spent on eligible expenditures, and ultimately make sure that the jobs were created. And if they're not, then yes, we will work on the behalf of the state to recover those money.
Please continue.
All right. So we'll shift gears and really focus now on our workforce development programs. And just for questions, I'll have our Deputy Commissioner Jeremy Hanson-Willis just come up, just to be prepared if questions come up. All right, and this slide just is a reminder of the workforce development area in general. As I mentioned earlier, we're focused on making sure that our talent, which is the most important part of our state remaining competitive, is ready to work. Mm-hmm. And so just a reminder with respect to the programs in that area, you have our employment and training programs, our vocational rehabilitation services for Minnesotans living with disabilities, our state services for the blind, our unemployment insurance programs. And so the chair specifically within this area wanted to have us discuss the Workforce Development Fund. And so I will give a little bit of history on the fund and really go into kind of how the receipts are received into the fund. And so the fund was created in 1990. It was originally the Dislocated Worker Program, and the purpose of the fund was to ensure that sufficient job training resources were available throughout the economic cycle to retrain laid-off Minnesotans during bad times and upskilling incumbent workers during good times into stable jobs in high-demand occupations. And very important to note that this funding for the Workforce Development Fund comes from a surcharge fee on employers through the unemployment insurance tax system. And so typically Minnesotans who qualify for unemployment insurance benefits qualify for the Dislocated Worker Program. And so when we think about, what's kind of a healthy balance, is especially for the fund roughly about $30 million is one during those normal economic times, and maybe a little bit more for those tough times. So looking at this chart, and you think about the receipts, as I stated, the fee for employers on the unemployment tax system, and that comes into the fund. And then what comes next is any appropriation made by the legislature come off the top. And so when we think about the broad categories of what's coming off the top, on your left, BEAD and Department of Labor and Industry programs. And so some programs within our department come off the top with respect to our youth programs, our Pathways to Prosperity program, funding also for our small business development centers, our rural career counselors. And so that funding comes off the top before it goes into the dislocated worker program. The other area, which is directed by the legislature, are direct appropriations for specific programs that the legislature over the years have decided they want to fund. And so you'll see some programs such as Twin Cities Rise get a direct appropriation, Big Brothers, Big Sisters, Boys and Girls Club, and Historic Preservation Corporation. So a number of programs before it comes to our department, specifically to administer the Dislocated Worker Program, receive the direct appropriations. So the total receipts minus those two broad categories equals the amount that actually goes into the Dislocated Worker Program. And so when you break down the work that we do in that program, about 61% of that funding goes into a formula that is actually allocated to local areas, so local workforce development areas. And they are providing services for small layoffs, which is under 50. And so they are providing anyone who is coming into the workforce centers, the local workforce development areas are administering that part of the fund. And then about the remaining 39% of the dislocated worker funding that eventually comes into the program is for mass layoffs, which is about 50 or more employees. So I'll stop there if there's questions specifically on the fund and how receipts go into the fund.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner, for being here. Just a question on the Workforce Development Fund. What percentage, with regards to the dislocated workers, of all those workers that are out there, what percentage of those dislocated workers actually access the Workforce Development Fund? Or did I miss that in the small print somewhere? By the way, one of the workforce development tools that we have in my part of the state is we cut down trees and make paper. So if we had more large pieces of paper here, that would be good.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, your question is what percentage of the workers that are laid off access the dislocated worker program? So when you think about for small layoffs and mass layoffs, for mass layoffs in particular, over 50 or so, we'll get a WARN notice from the company. And sometimes it takes up to 6 months or up to a year for the employees to access our services. And so I think on average, I think we're about 50% of those who are eligible for the funds actually come into the program to access the funds. And I think that is roughly about the same for those going to the workforce development areas for the small layoffs, about 50%. So not 100%. So when we think about large layoffs we had over the years, Target, for example, I think that was under 50% of Target employees actually access the services that they qualify for. So.
Was it a Fabian follow-up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then to follow up on that, are there some barriers that exist that keep them from applying, or is it just a personal decision that they just choose not to do that? Do you have any insight for me?
Mr. Chair, I'll answer and I'll allow Deputy Commissioner Hanson Willis to answer too. It's a choice. It's a choice for employees to decide. You know, some may within weeks get a new job. Some may decide to, they want to take the time. But with respect to access points into our system to be able to come in a workforce center, it's open. And depending on the size of the layoff, if it's a large mass layoff, we have a rapid response team. So we have a team that's there to help people through the process and help them to get access to programs. But overall, it's a choice of that employee to decide if they're going to access those programs.
Thank you.
Commissioner Alwitz, or Mr. Hanson-Willis, you want to add something?
Sure, Mr. Chair. I think that the commissioner is right that the main reason that they're only about half of the people is the other half either find employment on their own or choose a different route altogether or go for training on their own. So it's primarily a choice of theirs. I think that some of the barriers that we do have are just that people, we want them to all know about the programs, and even with the efforts that we have to meet in places of employment and have meetings with the employees, the entities that actually provide the direct services are often chosen by the employees themselves about who they want to provide those services. And then you have the other barriers that are not specific to this program in terms of educational barriers and employment barriers. So what was the person doing today? Does that occupation exist? Does that business exist? Does that line of work exist? How much retraining and retooling does someone need to get back into work? Are some of the barriers that make it difficult for people to retain a new employment? But accessing the services mostly has to do with their choice.
Representative Mensa.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Fabian, I kind of wanted to jump in and piggyback off what you were saying. I had quite a bit of experience working with DEED over the last few years. With our economic downturn, would like to thank members of the legislature last year in getting unemployment benefits out, and the department for helping administer all those individual cases. And, you know, one thing I kind of found fascinating, actually, in dealing with this is how quick and customizable our state agency was. So the comments that Representative Garofalo, or I should say Chair Garofalo, opened up with in terms of finding efficiencies and good ways to do things. We had unemployment insurance, a bunch of handouts you would get when you started. And we had kind of talked as we were going, and it had dislocated workers was in one book. And so we kind of had all said, how can we make this work better without changing any state laws? And I know we worked with the governor's office and DEED, and we were able to, for not to belittle the folks using it, but make a coloring book essentially for adults to follow for this process. So when you're actually going in, literally you flip and you know that you qualify for all these, and you don't grab 20 different pamphlets and all of them reference each other. It's all in one spot. And so I think that was a huge step in making the user end a lot easier, because anyone getting laid off, the last thing on their mind is getting the state the right paperwork. They're trying to figure out how to pay their next set of bills, looking for that next job, making arrangements for their health care. And I couldn't be prouder of the work that we're able to do here as a state. And this is a great program, for example, when you're on a layoff where you have a trade case that's ruled in your favor on a federal level, you would qualify for something called TAA, which would basically enable you to go back to school. Now, these are much longer-term programs designed for unfair trade, so you get access to longer time periods of similar benefits, I should say, not exact same. But to be able to work with DEED on this, for example, all of our colleges overnight when you know, a third of your workforce in your main industry gets laid off, our college programs were full. So literally our local students who wanted to stay and go to our local community college and maybe couldn't even afford to go elsewhere were forced to be on the waiting list. With DEED's help and with the federal government, we are actually able to get new course materials provided, working in conjunction in terms of adding capacity for more class time. And I just couldn't, you know, be prouder of what we're able to do with programs like this and what it actually means to the person who needs the program. All they want to see is their government work. And I can say if there's any issues or any efficiency ideas, we don't need to put a bill in with this team a majority of the time. If they can figure out a way to do it, you know, without having us come in and get in front of a committee and pass along, spend more money, and redirect things, make it a little better, they're open to it because we're the boots on the ground getting the calls. And, you know, thank you all for that work. I know it took the village. And I just look forward to finding more examples like that where, you know, we aren't necessarily going to boil the ocean, but we can make one person's experience a little bit better. And I feel like we did that 1,000 times over with all the people we dealt with in my district and neighboring districts. So.
And Commissioner, since you have that adult coloring book, I'd suggest you use that as a template for communicating with legislators.
Right.
So that would be helpful. So,
we will do that. Thank you, Representative Mesa.
Continue.
All right. This next slide, and I can quickly go to the other areas. This is just another breakdown of just the fun and the focus. The blue area is the 51%, which is focused on laid-off workers. And the next area, the 15%, is at-risk youth. And then individuals with disabilities, adults with barriers, and those direct appropriations that I mentioned.
And Commissioner, have you given an electronic copy of this to staff so we can...
Yes.
Okay, so
yes.
If the committee legislative assistant could email this to the members of the committee afterwards. So, thanks. Please continue.
All right. The next area I want to talk a bit about is our competitive grants programs. Specifically, the chair wanted to get an understanding of where we are and how we got to this environment. And so just quickly a brief history on how we arrived today. Some of you were here in the 2011 biennial budgeting session where three new competitive grant programs were created. And this kind of shift gears from where we were with respect to direct appropriations to workforce development organizations. And so the initial descriptions of the programs were very simple. Adult workforce programs, youth workforce program, and a business development competitive program. And so in 2013, we worked, after getting the funding for the grants to really refine the programs and really just to double down on how do we make sure that the competitive process that we create leads to outcomes specifically for the areas that the legislature has decided to invest in. And so in 2015, the governor really pushed for our agency to strengthen the programs with respect to metrics and accountability. We worked to streamline a program within our adult workforce program, and we changed the name to Pathways to Prosperity. We streamlined that program with a older program called Fast Track, and really looked to figure out how do we capitalize on very demand-driven training programs, but also working in partnership with our education institutions and the nonprofit organizations that are out there providing what can be called those wraparound services. Our youth program became our Youth at Work program, and then our business development. We didn't get anything creative, and it's still business development competitive program. So we'll work on that. We'll work on that. But I really wanted just to give that foundation that we've kind of evolved. There still are direct appropriations that come, as I said earlier, out of the fund. But with respect to specific marquee programs for the agency, it has moved to this competitive nature. And so I wanted just to spend a little bit of time on last grant cycle. And many of you here worked on the equity article, which appropriated about $35 million. The equity article, in addition to creating four new programs, it also invested in the earlier programs that I mentioned with Pathways to Prosperity and our Youth at Work program. And so the equity article focused on how are we looking to improve economic opportunities for all Minnesotans, specifically Minnesotans of color, Native Minnesotans, Minnesotans living with disabilities, veterans, and women. And so that was the focus of those programs, really figuring out how do we invest in that program. And when you look at the breakdown of that article, some were awarded in the form of direct appropriations to specific agencies. And as I mentioned, the new competitive grant programs were created. So on the screen, you have a list of all those programs. For the sake of time, I won't list out individual awards, but wanted you to have that information. And if you have a question on specific organization and awards, we do have that information that we can get that to you.
But one thing I want to note, as we think about this work in this area, that the response to the grant cycle was very loud. We received about $48.4 million in proposals from about 165 Minnesota organizations around the state. We only had $10.1 million to give out this cycle. And so it was a very competitive process to really make a decision on how we move forward with investing in those specific target groups throughout the state. And so for context, for Pathways to Prosperity, we had about $950,000 available, requesting $8.25 million, trying to serve about 3,000 people. And so there was a very huge gap in the funding that was needed out there and the funding that we have available. And so with respect to kind of the process, a couple things that we did, you know, we tried to do differently. You know, one of the things that, as mentioned, we are open to continuous improvement, figuring out how we can continually, efficiently deliver our programs. And so one of the things that we heard is making sure that we understand who we are trying to serve. And so one of the things that was very important for this new cycle was to do outreach. And so prior to us putting, after the legislature appropriated the funds, prior to putting the RFP together, we did a number of community outreach informational sessions. We did one in person and one over the phone to make sure that our outstate colleagues could participate. We worked to develop the RFPs based on that information. In addition, we were very clear and intentional about making sure that when the RFP was posted, that we make sure that we actually sent it to all members of the legislature to let them know that it was posted, to send to their communities, and really try to make sure that there was true transparency in what it is that we were trying to do. The other thing that we did was different is that we had our experts from not only DEED. One of the things that was very unique about the competitive grant programs, they were not all specific just to job training. There were other components in there, financial literacy, education, and other pieces that were within those grants, which are not 100% in our wheelhouse. And so we made a decision to make sure that we worked with our sister agencies, so we invited them to be a part of our review panels. And in addition, wanted to stay true to making sure that we can connect to community. And so we invited for-profit, non-profit individuals to join the review panels. We also invited foundations. You know, we're giving out money. And so being able to have the expertise of actual foundations to assist us with the process is what we did. And through that process, I think that we really worked to ensure that transparency and diversity in our decision making, and it's one that we're looking through a continuous improvement process to figure out how we can deploy throughout the entire agency. And so that's something that we're working to do. Next to the last area that I wanted to just focus on, that the chair asked us to focus on. Go ahead.
Representative Baker has a question. Mm-hmm. Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Hardy, again, maybe I'm jumping in as more of a statement at the end, too, but this is close enough, and I just wanted to say thank you for the overview so far, because as a small business owner, I've been involved on my own for about 18 years now, doing my own business and working with DEED on different things. I sat on a couple different economic development authority boards and chambers of commerce, and so I know the work out there is really good. I guess, if anything, I just wanted to offer other advice that I'm hearing now as a legislator for the last couple of years. That, and I think I said this the last time the commissioner before you was here 2 years ago, and that is, if you really want to make a difference in job creation in Minnesota, work side by side with the MPCA. They are hurting job creation more than you can possibly imagine. And by saying that, I don't mean that we need to ignore the rules. And we all want a clean state. The reason why states around us are spending twice as much as we are on job retention, pulling people out of Minnesota, is because we have an awesome state to live in. My question for my statement, I guess, if anything, is to make sure that the understanding that you have with the commissioner of MPCA is that You together go out on some visits and some larger manufacturing plants and some ethanol plants and find out how many jobs they have not been able to create by their expansions because of the duplication of policy and procedures and mandates and studies and on and on and on. I want to make sure your work is being recognized as good, but it could be multiplied many times, I think, if you look at the other agency that we need to work better with. And that would be with more timely permits and upfront coloring books. I mean, honestly, that's what we need on that department. You need to show them how to do that. Because when large companies want to go do this and they put in their application, which takes 6 months to put together and thousands of dollars, they need to have a book that they know what the rules are. And that doesn't exist. And so my passionate plea to you is that you work with the commissioner over at the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency to make sure that you together are working to make Minnesota the best job creation state in the upper Midwest, because I think that's a big part of what we're doing. I know Representative Mahoney has made comments before about all the other funds we had to move around a little bit last couple of years, but we've made record investments in broadband, which is also under your department. And I'm really proud that Chair Garofalo was really adamant we had to have that investment. So, and I'm looking forward, and I'm looking forward to working with Chair Garofalo further, because we have a lot of things we have to do. So, as we all roll our sleeves up and be just upfront, let's make sure that we're calling it what it is. This is good investments for the state, and I look forward to a lot of these kind of things. But just, my only comment would be just, I really do hope that you understand what they're doing as well to slowing down your growth and to help you really multiply your numbers. So thank you again. That's all I have, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Baker.
I would also, Mr. Chair,
yeah, Representative Messer, go ahead.
Would love to thank you for your support of Minnesota Made Solar and many other.
All right. Any other questions before we move on? Commissioner, next agenda item. Yeah, report card.
Mr. Chair, can I just acknowledge Representative Baker? We will take that recommendation very strongly. We sit in partnership with MPCA on the business first stop, and that table is to talk through those exact things, and I chair that group. And so we are committed to making sure, and not just the PCA, Commerce also sits there, Transportation also sits there, because as we think about for our larger companies, when they show up to do business with Minnesota, being able to figure out how they can go through one door is what we're trying to make sure that we can make sure that process is as seamless as possible. So thank you.
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair and Representative Baker, I think most of the issues that you tried to address are really hard votes in this particular building or the building across the street that we have to take. I don't think it has anything to do with MPCA other than maybe the lawyers from outside the MPCA. It doesn't have anything to do with the two commissioners. It's hard votes that we'd have to take. So.
Commissioner, on to the Workforce Development Program report card.
Okay, very quickly. The Workforce Development Outcome Report Card is a web-based tool. Again, if you go to our website, you can be able to interact with the tool. It's a performance-based tool that allows for us to really measure what we are investing in. And so you're able to really track to see where our dollars going, and also be able to make decisions on if we should continue to invest in those programs. And so we're looking at metrics such as, you know, educational attainment, how many jobs were created, the region, and so really being able to break down from a demographics perspective. And so on our website, and you're able to see colorful pie charts, if that is where we're going, on the report card. And the most up-to-date report card should be up in about a week or so. But there is the latest report card that's up there. And you can track by programs. And it's DEED's existing programs, but it's also other programs that we invest in. And so you can be able to see how those programs are doing on the report card. And
Commissioner, could someone from your staff notify the Committee Legislative Assistant when it is actually updated so then we can forward that information on to the
Absolutely.
Committee? All right, thank you.
The last area that I want to touch on is the chair was interested in the unemployment insurance trust fund, specifically the solvency level. Just a note of background, in 2016, the governor signed into law a bill amending the state's unemployment insurance law to provide for a trust fund solvency that, if reached, would trigger a reduction in unemployment taxes to employers. And so the solvency level is determined by a mechanism called the average high cost multiple, or the AHCM. And the AHCM takes into consideration how much a state can expect to pay out in unemployment benefits during an economic downturn. And so when we look at the federal standard for the trust fund solvency, 1.0 is what we're looking at. And so it's very important just to understand just the importance of having a solvent fund during recession. You know, when we think about the need for tax stability, being able to make sure that we don't have to do any federal borrowing or interest rate payments, and the likelihood of triggering other federal taxes. And so making sure that our fund is solvent. And unfortunately, we ran into this situation in 2009 where in our unemployment trust fund, we had to pay out about $1.7 billion in payout, and that pretty much depleted the fund. And so really making sure that we are adhering to the AHCM to make sure that we stay around that 1.0 is important. And we look at that number at the close of every year on December 31st. And on December 31st of this year, we had about $1.6 billion in the fund, and our AHCM was about 0.90. And so we think that we have been really doing a good job. And I just want to note that there was a trigger with reduction to be implemented in July of 2016. And this doesn't affect the current funding, and the budget is not impacted by that. And that reduction in the amount paid by employers will go into June of 2017. And so, there are no questions on that.
Representative Metza?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just in all seriousness in this one, just so everyone knows, I was joking about Pat, Representative Garofalo, supported Minnesota Made Solar. Been one of our things back and forth for about 4 years now. However, this fund, I am proud of the work we were able to do last year, getting a cap on it, which I believe, and maybe correct me if I'm wrong, that we're the first state in the country to have a fully protected trust fund, which I think is a very great thing, and I think that we found the most responsible way last year to do the rebate, even though you took me kind of dragging and kicking with you. it was actually, we worked on, it was some policy stuff. It was kind of fun to go into wonk land for a little while and learn all about the 20-year average with the federal requirements, and you take your three highest years over the last 20, and those are how you get your average for, you know, the numbers coming in. See, I see all of you glazing over right now. But it was fascinating to learn about, and I actually really feel like we did make a good difference in how this fund will move forward. So,
and Commissioner, I don't know if you want to phone a friend on this one, but for the end of 2017, what's the projected balance, and what is the trigger for the average high cost multiplier for a rebate to be? Because now we're going to automatically process those. What is the projected for the end of 2017, and what is that percentage?
The trigger? The trigger is 1.0 plus about 4%.
1.04?
Yeah.
Okay.
For the trigger?
I think
ACMs, yeah.
Average high cost multiplier, we get to a certain percentage. I thought there's a percentage. Maybe we could call my Italian friend up to the table if he wants.
Yes, we'll bring up Rick to make sure we are understanding your question.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Rick Caligiuri, and I'm the Unemployment Insurance Director at Deed. The dollar figure for what the average high cost multiple of one would be floats. So right now it would be not quite $1.7 million.
billion?
$1.7
billion, correct. And we were at a little over 1.5 at the end of this year, so we came out at 0.9 for the average high cost multiple. We don't think it will trigger at the end of next year, but it really depends on the economy.
Yeah. The trigger is 1.04?
The trigger is the solvency level that we've, the goal that we've set by statute is 1.0, but we added a 4%. We need a mechanism to make it worthwhile to administer a very large tax credit. It's a lot of work. In fact, we started on this July 1st, and as of now, we've applied about $207 million in credits to Minnesota businesses, and the rest will be applied in this next quarter.
The point behind that was that in the event we were at 1.01, it doesn't make sense to process rebates and checks for de minimis amounts.
It would be costly to administer, so we need about a 4% float, which, roughly speaking, is about $50 million. So
what is the forecasted balance for the UI Trust Fund at the end of 2017?
I don't have that with me, but we anticipate we can get that for you.
Okay. Any other questions or comments for the testimony? Oh, Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not really meaning this to take a poke at anybody here, because we did – when we were in charge, we did this. When you were in charge, you did this. So my question for the commissioner, for Mr. Caligiuri, is was there a need for more FTEs, or how many staff hours did you have to invest as an agency to set this up and process it?
Mr. Caligiuri.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, we did not need additional FTEs to do this. We were able to do this with our existing staff.
Additional questions or comments? Representative Fabian, then Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to piggyback on a couple of things that have been said from the other side of the room, Representative Metza and Representative Baker. I do believe that, Commissioner Hardy, that the tone that you set, you know, for creating jobs and helping businesses is a positive one, and I appreciate that. I wrote down a couple of things that you've said, and I want to piggyback off of Representative Baker. I believe that you said that you are constantly working to develop strategies for businesses to thrive and grow, and I think that that's terrific. I really do. And he also said, I believe, that you're working to make sure that businesses are getting access to the resources that they need. And again, I appreciate that. But when I'm back home in northwestern Minnesota and when people come into my office, they don't come to me telling me that they need help from Deed. They come to me saying that they need help from us to help get state government off their back. MPCA and other agencies, the taxes that they pay, the overly burdensome regulatory process that they go through, and the rules and so forth really are counterintuitive to businesses who are trying to create jobs and make profit and help their local communities grow. So to what Representative Baker said about working with MPCA and other agencies, I agree with him. When you talked about the business first stop, that was established in 2011 in House File 1. As a part of that, and I was obviously pretty involved in that. But even today, it takes it. We have some applications that are put in for a permit, and when the agencies get that, they have a certain amount of time to respond to just let them know that the permit is complete. We need to figure out a way to get a decision on whether or not a permit is complete. Rather than waiting 27 of the 30 days and then sending it back and saying, oh, by the way, your permit's not complete. We need to expedite those processes. And I would love to have a meeting with you and Commissioner John Linkstein and Chair Garofalo to see if we can't come to some sort of understanding and agreement on that. So I am kind of making more of a statement here than I am asking you a question, but I do have two questions.
With regards to business development in the state, we've heard some things about venture capital. Can you give me some sort of a sense, or can one of your assistant commissioners help me understand where we are with regards to other states in terms of the amount of venture capital that's coming here?
Kevin?
Go UND.
And thank you, Mr. Caligiuri. I appreciate your testimony. And please restate your name for the record so we know who you are on tape.
Sure. Thanks, Mr. Chair. Kevin McKinnon with Deed. Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, the question was how much venture capital is coming into the state of Minnesota relative to other states.
And Mr. Chair, if you don't, I can preface that by saying we heard before in committee that the amount of venture capital has actually been decreasing that's been coming into the state. Is that stabilized? Is it coming back up again? Do you have some sort of historical perspective that you can provide to us?
Mr. McKinnon.
Mr. Chair, today I don't have that, but we could certainly put that together. Just some comments off the from my familiarity with it. There are certain states that obviously have a lot more venture capital than Minnesota, and there are also a lot of states in which Minnesota is able to attract a lot more venture capital than. We are very fortunate, as you know, to be in the position of having some leadership in some key industries that a lot of venture capital is going into. So over the years, I would say it's been relatively stable from a venture capital perspective. But what you're seeing is more companies who were originally slated to be into the venture capital stage. More are actually being staying at the angel stage at this point. And so the exits into the VC stage right now, as far as I can see, might be lacking a little bit, so you're not getting to that point yet. But we could certainly put together some kind of report for you that goes through all of that.
Thank you.
Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then one final question. You know, we hear a lot about unemployment rates and so forth, and that's an important statistic. But we also hear about the labor force participation rate. And Minnesota's labor force participation rate has been declining in the recent years. I'm wondering who in your agency, Commissioner Hardy, is kind of responsible for looking into that labor participation rate and trying to figure out why is it going down and how can we bring that back up again? And I know the generic answer may be the entire agency, but I guess I'm looking for, is there somebody who's holding up that umbrella?
Yes. Mr. Chair, President Fabian. Our labor market, we have a labor market information team, and that's what they do all day. And so, Mr. Hine, if you want, we can sit down with you and go through our labor market information, our forecasting. We can work with you and provide you with that information.
Representative Scott, and then Wendy Nias.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your presentation today. Appreciate it. And to feed off of Representative Garofalo's kind of his leading statements, just wondering if you could kind of give an overall view of how you measure programs' success, mm-hmm. And do you do that on an annual basis, biannually, whatever? And I know we heard from you regarding the different divisions of DEED, mm-hmm. and so within each division there are different programs, and so mm-hmm. do the metrics, the way that you measure things, change throughout programs? I'm assuming they do, but just wanted to get your feedback on that.
Mr. Chair, to your point, within each of our programs, the measurements are different. So when we're thinking about, from a workforce perspective, how many people actually were able to be trained, educational attainment, when we're thinking about it from a business development perspective, how many jobs created, how tax base, increase and things like that. And so it really just depends on a specific program. And depending on, the type of program, the duration of it. And so most of our, investment funds, either 2 years, but when we think about most of our grants, they're about a year. And so it's a continuous look at those measurements through our systems, and that's DEED's programs, but it's also the programs that we are investing in for nonprofit organizations.
Okay.
So it's continuous.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Representative Garofalo. So thinking about those different metrics and the outcomes, and I'll put you on the spot here a little bit, but is there a program that you can think of that the product hasn't been what you had hoped, and if you could take the funds put towards that particular program and put it to one that you think is more successful and needs more funding, what would you take from and give to?
Mr. Chair, I don't have an answer for you right now. I would need to pull up the metrics. All right. But it's something that, you know, depending on what you're interested in looking at, I'm really happy to sit down with you to talk through that. Okay. But off the cuff, I don't want to name a program because there's nuances when you think about measurements and when you're thinking about the outcomes.
Thank you.
And Representative Scott, something that I'm looking at right now, and I hope the committee does too, is that we have 8 competitive grant programs, as the commissioner mentioned earlier. And feedback I have gotten in the last week is from people saying, well, you know, we kind of do 2 of these things that are in separate grant programs. We got to sit down and apply 2 separate programs. And it's not a decision for today, but a future conversation is maybe if we were to kind of consolidate some of those competitive grant programs, that it might be not only mandate relief for the department, but also might provide better services for those who are applying for the grants. Just something to consider, but we obviously requires further committee research. Representative Wagenius and Mahoney.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. When Representative Fabian was talking about venture capital and giving us some sense of that, I think it would be helpful if we had a sense of that in the context of other states. So it's just not what we need, a context, if you could help us with that.
Mm-hmm. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and it's just advice to, particularly to new members, from someone who's been on this committee for a while. The commissioner mentioned Mr. Hines, the Minnesota labor economist. They spend a great amount of time, and they can tell you, they can answer many questions more in depth than we'll probably ever get to in committee. Everything from the most jobs coming at the state in the next 10 years to the least number of jobs, the unemployment rate, the labor participation rate, the amount of training needed or not needed. So it is a good idea for members to put a call in to Mr. Hines or one of his employees to kind of find out what you can find out from them, because it will help speed along what we're trying to do in the committee, which is encourage job growth.
Mm-hmm. Representative Lehman.
I have a little different question. I'm just looking at your organizational charts and where you focus, and seeing that you're focusing primarily on workforce development, which I think is appropriate, and probably where you can be most effective, and then focusing on businesses that are already here and helping communities attract and keep those businesses. But what I didn't see, and maybe I just missed it, I didn't see anything about marketing Minnesota as a state to do business in. Mm-hmm. I saw the Minnesota Trade Office, and I know that you know, mm-hmm. do some traveling around the globe mm-hmm. to help encourage trade. Mm-hmm. But I'm just interested in your philosophy and thinking on that area of marketing the state. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chair, the Explore Minnesota Tourism is under our agency. So they're independent, but we work in partnership with them. Directly to your question, we don't have a marketing line item.
You don't?
No. So we go program to program to be able to do the outreach, but specifically to market the state of Minnesota, the department does not have a marketing budget.
Can I follow up?
Representative Lehman.
Well, I'd just be interested if you're willing to share your philosophy on that. I think in total, economic developers have come to realize that the bigger payoff is working with businesses that are here, that have already chosen Minnesota, and the people that have chosen to invest in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. But many think that there's still a place to attract new investment to the area. You know, of course, in the mining region, we're attracting investment from all over the world and the forestry likewise. But there might be opportunities for small business. Are you willing to share your philosophy on that?
Commissioner. We would love a marketing budget.
Oh.
I think to your point, it's Mr.
Line
Chair.
Up to that bill with you, Representative Lane.
it's very important to be able to have a funding source to really provide businesses information on the services that we provide, and just to be able to tell the story of a state from an economic perspective is very important. And it gets a little hard, you know, when you're trying to cast the net and you have to do that program by program by program by program. And so being able to have access to funding to market our state, and as I said, we have a trade office, and so it's a local, regional, national, and global responsibility for us to put the state, position the state on a level that we can be competitive. And so being able to have access to funding to do that is very important.
Commissioner, and to your deputy. Oh, Representative Metza, my apologies.
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just going to say, Representative Lehman, I know one great thing we were able to do last year, I consider us as the legislature a pretty big marketing arm. And I know that when Louisiana Pacific, as an example, presented the idea that they were looking at coming to Minnesota, we immediately connected with Chair Garofalo, with Speaker Doubt, and many, many others who helped out. But we were able to work with Deed and give some direction then. And so if there are ideas, I would encourage you at any time, you know, get in touch with them, and we can usually get that marketing team just a, you know, one-two punch and get together what we can. But they work real quick to put together a package that now is looking like we're going to have 200 more jobs up in our neck of the woods. So,
Representative Barr.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Chairman. Sorry. Don't Commissioner. Could you give me an idea of the loan programs you have of the repayment rate or failure to repayment rate? And then second question would be, on the loans that are repaid, are you able to re-loan those funds out, or are they returned to the general fund?
Mm-hmm. Commissioner? And while I do not want the title of commissioner, I will happily take the compensation of a commissioner. I'll swap out legislative pay for that. Commissioner?
Trade office is open.
Yeah.
It is. Open. We do have a position open. I'll have Deputy.
If you'd answer the question, Commissioner, that's what we'd appreciate.
I'll have Deputy Commissioner McKinnon answer that question.
Mr. Chair, yes, those loans are repaid. And as I stated before, if we do a $500,000 loan, the community that the business is in keeps the first 20% or 40% up to $100,000. So the other $400,000, yes, comes back to us and stays within a revolving loan fund. Yes.
Is
Representative Barr.
Thank you, Chairman. Is there a failure rate on that?
Mr. Chair, since 1985, we've had about a 4% default rate. Within that program, the Minnesota Investment Fund program.
Thank you.
Representative Mahoney.
To Representative Barr's question, every once in a while, a chair of this committee will go in and grab that money that's in those particular payment funds, and not this chair, not one of the past chairs or two, but it has happened. And
when the fund gets a little large, somebody thinks it's too large, scoops it up. I
would have another way of phrasing that, but I'll leave it at your words.
Commissioner, and to your testifiers, thank you very much. You know, I know the governor's budget will be coming out later this month, and then with the February forecast, there may or may not be revisions to it. So my hope would be to maybe try to keep you guys consolidated one more visit in terms of budget overviews, but there might be two. But thank you again for the testimony and for the detailed overview. I would just say please make the slides a little bigger font next time, and feel free to kill some trees. I know we have some members of the committee who would be happy with that. Any questions for the chair? Seeing none, we are adjourned for the day. Thank you.